Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome on the weekend that the pubs open again in the UK. It's going to be really interesting. I've heard so many conflicting reports, actually. People who say, there's no way I'm going to go near the pub with the list of restrictions, having to give your ID and fill in practically, you know, everything almost, you know, sort of how often you go on the internet. And I think in some pubs, the restriction is you can stay for 1 hour and you can have two pints. One of my friends was telling me there's all these kind of restrictions. And I think a lot of people are just feeling, well, I won't bother. And then, of course, there are others who are thinking, yeah, bring it on. I'll find a way. It's going to be really, really interesting. I'm just so amazingly thankful to be free of it. I really am. I'm so grateful that I haven't got to have that stress. And I think, you know, for me, I'm getting straight into it this week, right? For me, I think the huge shame is that the pubs are all opening up, but the gyms and the holistic centres aren't. You know, therapists can't open yet, and holistic practitioners, and that's a huge shame. It's, you know, we're meant to be in the middle of a, in inverted commas, health crisis, but not really doing much within the recommendations of looking after our own health and well-being. Anyways, most of you listening to this are probably very clued in to taking responsibility and being, you know, part of the solution, not part of the problem. So we just have to keep our vibration high, don't we? That's what we have to do. And this week's podcast is hopefully going to really be helpful with that, because I came across this just fantastic Facebook post, actually. It just started because I saw this Facebook post about emotions and how most of us are not sort of really aware of our emotions. You know, we know we feel sort of fed up, pissed off, angry, jealous, whatever, and we kind of have the top line, but then we don't really go any deeper. And I just thought this was fascinating because it's something that we've been talking about so much within the Sober Club and on the podcast, just kind of the fact that when you ditch the booze, often you've started drinking when you were young. And so you've had all those years, relationships, things happen to you, grief, sadness, loss, all the big emotions, falling in love, the big emotions have been kind of numbed by booze, really. And most of us have got used to feeling uncomfortable or upset or angry or fearful. And the very next thing we do is just take a drink to get rid of those awful feelings, which of course is completely understandable because we're humans and we seek pleasure, don't we? We want to move away from discomfort and seek pleasure, which of course is a totally natural thing to do. And our unconscious mind tells us, I remember how you can feel okay again. You can have a drink and that will make you feel okay again. And for many of us, we've got years and years and years and years of this ingrained. And so, of course, when something bad happens, big or small, the thought process is, I feel terrible, I feel scared, I feel worried. I need to remember how I can feel better again. Oh, yeah, I remember I have to drink. And so this kind of unconscious thing that's been just going on with many of us for years and years and years. And when we stop drinking or taking drugs or both, we have to face those emotions. So it can be really raw. In the Sober Club the other night, we did a meditation, we did a live call together, and we did a meditation. And it was amazing how it's really quite emotional. All we were doing was actually thinking of a memory, and it made people really quite emotional. And I'm sure it's just because if you're in the early stages, you know, as I say, we just really haven't got used to dealing with these things. And yet they're so important, aren't they? You know, we have to learn to deal with stuff, and we have to be able to be conscious of that thinking first and then remembering how we feel before we take any action. And once you're ditching the booze and you're firmly on that path, over time, you do get better at it. That's the good news. If you're in the early stages and you're thinking, I'm an emotional wreck, because I certainly was for the first few weeks, the good news is it gets better. You do become much more able to recognise the emotion and recognise how you're feeling. That's why journaling and stuff is amazing. But you recognise how you're feeling and you notice, okay, so this is this feeling, this emotion. Why is it happening to me? How can I feel better? Where are my memories? Where are my, I call them bright spots, that actually support me properly? And that's when you can start to build new memories that are based around, stuff that isn't pouring liquid, toxic liquid on your head. And then you can choose a different action. So that's a very long-winded way of telling you that I got to interview the author of that great Facebook post. Her name is Carla McLaren, and she's written what looks like a fantastic book called Embracing Anxiety, How to Access the Genius Inside This Vital Emotion. And I just loved her positive approach. So I think you're going to really love the interview with Karen. But also this week, I'm really pleased to bring you an interview with Johnny from Unlimited Beer. Now, this is a really interesting story as well, because Johnny wrote a review for the podcast and then just dropped me a line and told me that, in not so many words, listening to the podcast had completely changed his life. I love stories like that. What he actually said was that he becoming alcohol free, and with things like the inspiration of the podcast, he had decided to start a brand, alcohol free beer. So what an amazing story. And I love things like this, the way that people just transform when they do this thing. They ditch the booze and then their whole life can transform. It's just amazing just to see how people kind of blossom and grow. It's really incredible. Just before we get into the interview, I must share with you that it's July, of course, and that means the podcast is 18 months old. I can't believe it, actually. I kind of missed the year anniversary. That went by in a blur. But I thought I'd celebrate the 18-month anniversary. And what I'm going to do is bring you a few archive episodes. So we're going to dig out some of the episodes from the archives relatively randomly and give you another chance to listen to some of those. And we're going to do a bunch of competitions. So make sure you keep your eye on social media, and we'll put blog posts on the soberclub.com as well. So I thought it would just be really nice to celebrate those 18 months. And I've been so lucky over these last 18 months to get all these amazing guests. When I first started doing the podcast, I'm sure I've shared with you before that I started to do it because I'd run out of podcasts to listen to. There weren't enough to kind of feed me. And also I was recognising that there were some amazing people that I really wanted to interview. And obviously with my radio hat on, that, you know, comes relatively naturally to me. So I really started it for myself so that I could just interview some of these amazing people. And I didn't have great expectations really about who would listen, because there's no publisher behind it, there's no funding or anything like that really. So it's just me and my little labour of love. But I just thought, I really just thought, what a great excuse to be able to talk to someone like Catherine Gray and Annie Grace and all the people that had inspired me. So that's really why I started it. And then it just kind of seemed to get a life of its own. And of course, I realised that it wasn't just me that had been kept alive, as it were, and kept sober by listening to inspirational podcasts. There are just so many. And it really, really, really makes a difference. If you are in the early weeks, perhaps if this is your first time listening, then I can't recommend highly enough just go back over lots of my old episodes and lots of other podcasts. Mine isn't the only one, of course, there are loads. And Great Quitlet, it's totally the answer. in the early weeks to keep you inspired and just keep you on track. Because if we just stay within with our thoughts and emotions that we're going to talk about with Carla, if we just stay within the whole time, it's really easy just to end up going down a rabbit hole of old stuff and sadness and regret and all of those things that we can feel when we first start to ditch the booze. And then if something crops up and upsets us, you hit the fuck it button. It's so common to do that. Particularly if other things aren't in place, if you don't have connection and accountability. So those are really the elements that, but that being inspired, that being able to catch sight of some, well, lots of people who are ahead of you and who have been there and done it. And you can hear by the way they speak that they genuinely have had the same, or well, not exactly the same, of course, but they've shared some of the same feelings that you have, that absolute feeling of being trapped. You know, I really remember that feeling of being in the alcohol trap. And I was a grey area drinker. You know, I was never at rock bottom, but I did feel trapped because when I tried to get free of it, I couldn't. And it used to freak me out that I couldn't do this. I was, of course, massively and still am into health and well-being and holistic living and taking responsibility. I hadn't darkened the door of any kind of medical place in years for anything. So it actually really shocked me when I finally realised that I couldn't just flick a switch and say, right, that's it, I don't need that in my life. It was much more deep-rooted than that. And so I've been there, I've done it, and I know how hard it is. I know that the early weeks can be tough, but I also now know stuff I didn't know back then, which is that you can make it easier for yourself, a lot easier, by a bunch of things. And one of them is staying inspired and staying informed. So educating yourself and being inspired and motivated, literally immersing yourself into the Quitlet, the podcast, just the inspiration, just literally get immersed in it. You're going to need a little bit of extra time, but then you get extra time, don't you, when you're not drinking? So today's show, then, we have got Carla McLaren and also Johnny from Unlimited as well. We've got a competition to win some Unlimited. Tell you more about that as well, some Unlimited beer, alcohol-free beer. And, of course, I have to remind you, this will be the last time that I remind you, so you'll be glad to hear me shut up about it, that the British Podcast Awards are still open for your votes just till Monday. So if you're listening to this before Monday the 6th, please, please, please vote for me in the listener's choice. It would make such a difference to me. You need to go to britishpodcastawards.com/vote and you click on that and you vote. And then you need to make sure you get an email come back at you, which you have to click to verify your vote. Otherwise, it hasn't gone through. I hope that makes sense. So I'd really, really appreciate that if you're listening before the 6th, britishpodcastawards.com/vote. And it's the listener's choice. And you just need to type alcohol-free life in the little search box there. So without further ado, let me introduce you to my guest, empathy pioneer and researcher, Carla McLaren. She's the author of this great new book, Embracing Anxiety, How to Access the Genius Inside This Vital Emotion. She also wrote The Art of Empathy. She's written The Language of Emotions. She is just queen of emotional intelligence. Enjoy. We're talking about the topic of anxiety, and I'm so pleased that my guest is Carla McLaren, the author of Embracing Anxiety, How to Access the Genius Inside This Vital Emotion. I love the title, just to start with. Thank you so much for joining us, Carla. I came across your work because I saw something that you'd posted, a kind of an emotions wheel or something like that. I'm sure we'll get into it. And it just kind of led me down a little bit of a rabbit hole, and I'm looking at all this stuff and I'm thinking, wow, this is just, I want to talk about all of this. I mean, clearly I haven't got you for that long. so you'll have to rein me in. But just before we get into the book, just tell us a bit about your background and what led you to doing this work that you do around emotions.
My background is that I noticed from when I was very little that emotions, this was my first thought, emotions are the problem. that everything would be fine if we didn't have emotions, because those were the things that caused people to be cruel to each other and to, you know, I just saw emotions were terrible. And then I began, as I grew up, to learn more about emotions, and I began to see that whenever I said, okay, let me look at when does anger, what is happening when anger comes up, right? Mm. What's happening in the situation? What is the person trying to do with anger? And I did it with all of the emotions. And I began to understand what emotions were for, rather than that just they're bad, right? So I began to notice when my cat was angry, when a horse was angry, when my dad was angry, when I was angry, the situation required the person or the animal to set boundaries. A boundary had been crossed, and so the person needed to set boundaries. And I noticed that people's skills were what was the issue. So you could set boundaries, you know, with cruelty. You could set boundaries with violence. You could set boundaries. You could refuse to set boundaries and nobody would know what the heck's going on. Or you could set boundaries with dignity and respect and a level of maturity. Same emotion, but it's people's skills that change how that emotion is utilized. And so that's when I went, ah, the emotions aren't the problem. It's people. It's people's skills that are.
I mean, this is the stuff that if only we were taught this in school. And in fact, we're taught in school, really, or what we're all taught as kids, is just, you know, those, and you said emotions are bad, those unhelpful emotions, squash them all down. We're not taught to kind of sit with emotions and think things through and really assess, are we? And the other thing that I'm really interested in your view on is, you know, just on this first little bit about emotions generically, is you know, the amount of work that we sort of have to do for ourselves on this growing up thing around emotions, and particularly with the work that I do with a lot of people who have stopped drinking. And of course, for years and years and years and years, they've been, sometimes perhaps since they were 15 years old, they've been numbing everything with alcohol. So if they're super happy, they drink. If they're super sad, they drink. If their relationship breaks up, they drink. So every sort of big thing has been numbed by alcohol. So when they do ditch the booze, they can often find they've got no idea how to handle this stuff. It's almost like the emotional maturity stopped really early on. And I know I went through it when I first ditched the booze. It was like a roller coaster of these mad emotions that I had no idea how to deal with.
Yeah. And you're not alone. I mean, people who don't go into more addictive substances will distract themselves from emotions, right? There's many forms of meditation that are just emotion distraction practices, right? So you get an emotion, you go, I'm going to go get my yoga clothes on, and I'm going to go sit in my cushion and just hope that these things go away. But I think that's what most of us have learned with emotions, is to somehow get away from them, however that looks. And I would say that is a really good idea if you've got something powerful coming up in you and you have literally no skills at all. Yeah, distract yourself. Like, run. It's more difficult, especially, as you said, we're just told when we're little, emotions are just bad. Like, stop them. And so when we get to an emotion, our skill set is invisible. There's none. There's no skill set. It's just sort of live through it or distract from it, something, right? But we don't have this sense that anger is about boundaries. Anxiety is about getting things done. Fear is about your intuition. We don't have this information.
So true. And let's talk about anxiety then. The book is Embracing Anxiety. And it's just, I mean, it's, well, certainly in recent months, literally everybody has had some level of anxiety. What could we put in place? What, you know, can you give us any examples of skills? You know, you mentioned skills. Are there any sort of, is there anything we could take on relatively easily to help us?
Yeah. With anxiety, the I think the key to all emotions is understanding what they are supposed to be doing, why they come forward, and then to learn to work with them instead of against them. So if anger comes up, for instance, and it's time to set a boundary, my job is to set a boundary, not run away. Mm. With anxiety, its job is to help us get ready and prepared and organized to go to the future and be successful there. So we've finished our tasks, we've alphabetized the spices, we've hit our deadlines, right? That's anxiety's work, and it's got a lot of energy sometimes if you've got a lot to do. Mm. And so the work with anxiety is to focus yourself. There's a question, what brought this feeling forward? And a second question, what really, truly needs to get done? Because if you get a lot of anxiety going and you don't ask the questions, you just kind of go. We've all done that where we're like, I got to pack. We should put wallpaper in here. You know, I have to write a check. Where did I just put the checkbook? I still have to pack. Do you know what I mean? So that anxiety would be a person sort of not setting any what truly needs to get done with it. Mm. We can also repress our anxiety and not get anything done and then be surprised as heck when tomorrow comes and we've got nothing, right? Mm. So with anxiety, it's to understand that it can help us get things done. You can't actually get anything done without your anxiety, but most people don't notice that. If they're good at things, they wouldn't say, I'm good with anxiety. They would say, I'm organized, I'm conscientious, I have foresight, I'm a good worker, right? Anxiety wouldn't be anywhere in there because we haven't been taught how to identify what our emotions do for us.
Mm. Where does anxiety fit with depression then? Because, you know, you mentioned doing stuff and getting stuff done, but often when people are feeling, however you would describe it, depressed or down, they don't feel motivated to get anything done.
Yeah. And depression is a very interesting emotion whose job is to pull your energy away if something's wrong, right? So there's always something wrong when depression shows up. But a lot of people take that and say, well, I'm wrong. So they can get into a spiral. But I always ask people, look around. Is it your health, your relationships, your job, the coronavirus? You have a terrible president. You have a terrible prime minister, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Is your depression saying, look, something's just wrong and we need to stop here and not move forward into more wrongness, right? So a lot of times depression and anxiety will come up together. I just had a situation of this happen yesterday. I have a lot going on right now and my anxiety is like a train and I'm getting so much done and I kept adding things to it. I'm like, yeah, we can write another thing and we can do another class and we can do this. And my anxiety was, I wouldn't say in charge, but my anxiety was my central emotion. Mm. And I'm not eating. I'm not exercising. I'm not, you know, I don't have a life. I'm just a working train, a machine. Mm-hmm. And my depression came up pretty strongly and I ignored it. And then it came up more strongly and I ignored it. But it was telling me, stop it. This isn't working. This isn't working. So depression was like a reality check for my anxiety. And so I was able to say to people, no, I'm not going to do that thing. We're going to put that off until the fall or, you know, or whatever, because I was just so intense that I was losing my balance.
Mm. So in a way that kind of brings us back to self-care and being able to recognize what we need and that we're not superhuman.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. And I think sometimes depression, you know, when it comes up very, very quietly to say, really? Because this isn't working. We push it down like I did with my anxiety. No, I got to keep going. Got to go, go, go. You know, there's deadlines to meet. And so all of these different emotions come to help us. But a lot of times we see them as the problem.
Mm. Yeah. I know you wrote a blog post, which I loved, on how you can work with multiple emotions. Mm-hmm. Just tell us a bit about that, because, you know, again, it links with the book Embracing Anxiety. You are suggesting that we embrace our emotions.
Yeah, because doing the other thing hasn't worked. That hasn't worked.
Trying to fight them down. Yeah. Absolutely.
Fighting them and distracting from them and running from them, that hasn't worked at all. Working with multiple emotions is interesting because, at least in the English language, we have very, very few words for multiple emotions. And sadly, that's the way emotions work. It is normal for emotions to work together. And if you see them as a series of gifts and skills and aspects of your genius, then you're going to want as many emotions as you can get. Right?
We wouldn't, but even just to pause you there, I mean, we wouldn't normally think that way, would we? Because obviously if I'm sort of, you know, angry and upset and you know, frustrated and procrastinating, I don't want any of those things, do I? Or do I?
You do, because each one comes like with a gift. And so if I'm just feeling like a whirl of emotions, then what I'll tend to do is, then this is really helpful to know that developing a stronger emotional vocabulary can help you regulate emotions all by itself.
What do you mean by developing a vocabulary?
If your vocabulary is very imprecise, and so you're like, I just feel blah today, or just kind of meh.
Okay, I see what you mean. You're not properly identifying it.
Yeah, to say I feel a light amount of sadness. I feel a lot of frustration moving into anger. I feel depressed, but not severely depressed. My anxiety's out the door. I'm confused, right? So you can organize it.
Yeah.
And then with each of these emotions, there's a different question to ask and a different practice so that you can begin to, you know, move all the pieces around on the board and understand what's happening.
How fascinating. So for most of us then, how can we get started? So we need to ask a few questions. Can you give us an idea of some of the good questions that we can just ask ourselves so that we can just become, it sounds ridiculous to say for anyone who's new to emotions, none of us are new to emotions, but we're new to the concept of embracing them, aren't we?
Can
you give us some suggestions of some questions to get us going?
Something that I like to do if people are new to working with emotions in this way is I have a very simple chart on my website. It's called an emotions chart. And it's just like a spreadsheet. So it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and you just write down what emotions I was feeling on this day. Mm. So you can begin to see the movement. And in each emotion category, I talk about what that emotion does. Anger sets boundaries. Anxiety helps you get things done. Sadness helps you let go of things that aren't working anyway. Mm. Grief comes forward when someone or something has died. So to begin to get a picture of it. Another thing I like to do is when people are just waking up, so they're between sleep and waking, to ask, how do I feel? And maybe write it down. And begin to make a space where your emotions have the permission to talk to you and to be identified as themselves instead of, I just feel stressed. Right? That stressed, that would be panic, you know, anxiety, fear, and maybe some sadness, right? Instead of using what I call weasel words, is getting very clear about what emotions you're feeling because they're really important aspects of your cognition. So knowing that they're there, you can begin to work with them.
And when it comes to working with them, what are some of the strategies that you know often work? I mean, I'm guessing that journaling, you mentioned writing things down, do you think that really helps when you just sort of let out some of the thoughts onto paper?
Yes. And I have a practice called conscious complaining where you just let the emotions come out. And it starts with complaining. It almost always starts with complaining. But generally, if you're writing enough or speaking enough, you'll get to a more core piece of it. Not that the complaining was wrong or a secondhand emotion, you know, but that sometimes we are called into our emotions through something that just bugs us. It's like, that's not right. And if we just stay there, we may never understand the deeper story of why it's not right. So doing conscious complaining can really help. A lot of times it'll start out with, that's not right. And it will end up with, and I don't think my mother ever loved me. You know, like it will get deep pretty soon. And then you'll understand why you react the way you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And what about things like walking in nature?
Being in a quiet... Now, can you get out to nature? Here we are still...
No, well, no, we can, fortunately.
You can, all right. Yeah. Yeah, it's more difficult here. Things opened up too quickly and we've got a huge rise in cases here. Mm-hmm. So getting out in nature is difficult for people. But definitely being in a place where you can be with your own thoughts.
Mm, yeah. And talking about your own thoughts, you know, what is the role of sort of mindfulness and meditation, do you think, when people are... Mm-hmm. Are first starting to really start to try and understand their own emotions?
Yeah, I think it can help to teach people how to access their bodies and how to calm themselves intentionally. Mm. I think there can be a problem with many forms of mindfulness in that they have you come up to the edge, like calm yourself, come up to the edge of an emotion and then just watch the emotion go. Mm. And I'm like, I love those first two steps, but the emotions are aspects of your genius. So why are you letting them go? It would still tend to treat emotions as if they're something to avoid.
Mm. Whereas right. You would rather we do what?
I would say, calm yourself, come up to the edge of an emotion, name it, and learn the practice for it. So instead of saying I'm angry and I'm just going to let that anger go and, you know, flow like a river, I'll say, oh, I need to set a boundary. Mm. So now that I'm calm and I know what emotion I'm feeling, now I get to use my skills. Please let me have developed skills, right? And now I use my skills to set a boundary in a way that another person can hear and that won't, you know, injure them or me.
Mm. I love this concept of the genius in this. Just tell me a bit more about that, about the way you're putting that spin on it.
Yeah. I think for many centuries, we've been taught that emotions are less than almost anything else. They're less than the intellect. They're less than spirituality. They're less than, you know, your body's understanding. But what we're understanding now, especially in newer areas of neuroscience, is that emotions are a part of everything you think, every belief you have, everything you do, every relationship you choose to get into, every action you take, and every behavior. Mm. So they are, instead of being less than, I would say they are underlying everything we do. And so they're the foundation of our behavior. And when I see people who work with emotions well, however they learn to do that, there's a genius there that is so different than the genius that you see in mere intellect alone. Mm. That there's an instinctual, like an ancient wisdom in emotions. Rumi talked about it. Rumi's one of the great emotion poets of the world. But he called them, he said, welcome them all, for they are gifts from beyond.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Yeah, amazing. I love that. Just tell us a bit about procrastination, because that is something that affects many of us.
Yeah. Now, I learned this from Mary Lamia back in 2010. She is a psychologist, and in 2017, she wrote a book called What Motivates Getting Things Done. And it's a book all about anxiety, but it doesn't say anxiety anywhere in the title because I think her publishers knew. Let's just keep anxiety out of it. People hate it. She said there's two kinds of anxiety responses. One is to be task-oriented, and these are people who like to write down lists. They like to do this, this, this. Their desks are organized. Everything is, you know, everything is finished. That's one way, but it's the only way we've learned that is appropriate. Mm. There's another way that is just as good, and it's called procrastination. And my friend Chris just put this up in his Facebook. He said procrastination is from the Latin. It means deferred till the morning or belonging to tomorrow. So a procrastinator doesn't go from task to task to task. A procrastinator kind of chills up into a deadline. Mm. Then a lot of anxiety will come up at the deadline and they'll get everything done. Mm. But because we don't see procrastinators as valuable people or procrastination as a valuable skill, we would say that a procrastinator is lazy, then lucky.
Yeah.
Rather than seeing it as an actually valuable way to do things. Now, the task-focused person, which I am, has a baseline level of anxiety going all the time, right? So I don't chill up to a deadline. I task continually up to a deadline. Mm. And so that's why I said earlier my depression had to come and say, you know, come on, cut it out. Mm. I've learned to procrastinate a little bit. I'm never going to be good at it. But a procrastinator can chill all the way to a deadline and then boom, get it done. And I'm just, now I look at procrastinators like, oh, I'm so envious. I wish I could do that.
I love it. So you're reframing it really. And yeah. So is it possible then for someone to be able to literally embrace all of their emotions, including anxiety, and be able to work with them and I don't know, maybe feel really quite balanced, whereas yeah. many of us feel very up and down too much of the time.
Yes, yes. And I've got a whole community now of people who I've trained in this work. And it's just lovely because, you know, we'll come and say, well, I was feeling some grief and this and this. And we'll all say, awesome. And we'll say to each other, that was some beautiful shame that you just used right then. I'm just like really watching you and your shame. That treating these things, treating emotions as aspects of cognition and your basic intelligence or genius even means that all of them are your friends. So I could write a book called Embracing Shame, Sadness, Grief, you know, to embrace all of them. Mm. And for me, it's also, it kind of creates an inner, you know, people say inner peace first and then world peace. If we've been taught to avoid and suppress and hate basic aspects of our own humanity, of our own cognition, then it's going to be very hard for us to create anything other than war in the world. So I think this is I was right when I was little, emotions are the problem, but not in the way that I thought.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. It's people's emotional skills that are the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you've already mentioned you've got the lovely chart on your website and various other, and I know you've got some stuff for kids as well, which is, I mean, how amazing. Yes. Let's start with getting the kids to recognize their emotions, which is fabulous. Tell us a bit about the book then, Embracing Anxiety. What do we get from it? Tell us what's in there.
It comes out today, and I think it comes out today in the UK as well. And in the book, I talk about anxiety and how to identify it as separate from other emotions. Many people connect anxiety and panic like their hands are squished together and they cannot be separated. And panic is a very different emotion from anxiety, but it is the one that is most often mistaken for it. Anxiety is about getting things done. Panic is about coming in with a lot of energy to save your life if you are in danger.
Yeah.
And so if anxiety has any dread or sense of danger in it, there's panic there too. Panic isn't bad. Panic's a brilliant emotion, but it's not anxiety. So I teach people how to identify which emotion they're in and then understand how to respond to that emotion. So if panic's there, you know, you would have a different response than if it was anxiety on its own. And then I look at 9 other emotions that like to work together with anxiety so that people can understand how to work with them, especially ones like anxiety and depression, which you brought up.
Yeah
They seem like opposites, like they're they don't have anything to do with each other, but if you understand what each job is, you can understand why depression's there.
Yeah. I mean, you say that anxiety is sort of always about getting things done, but surely sometimes isn't it anxiety when you actually just are fearful of what might happen to yourself or to somebody else, or you're just feeling really bad about yourself, actually, with so many self-limiting beliefs and so much talk going on in your head, you actually isn't that a form of anxiety?
I would say that if there is dread or fear of terrible consequences, there is probably panic in there. And if there is a sense that you are not going to be able to meet the present successfully, it's probably anxiety, but also some shame and guilt, which are telling you, yeah, there's things you need to accomplish. There's skills you need to develop before this happens. And a lot of people will just run from the shame and they just won't even do the thing, right? If they feel like a fear of failure, they just won't touch it, right? They'll be like, well, I don't need to do that thing I dream of. That would be too hard. And again, here's another situation where not having emotional skills will actually stop people from moving forward in their lives.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, it's just great to talk to you. And I can't wait to dive really deep into the book and recommend it to all the people I work with, because I think this really is the key for people who are, they're just getting to this point where they're ditching the booze, they're starting to care about their health and well-being, and they're just starting to recognize all this stuff coming up. And they're ready now to start to deal with it, because for the first time in years, they're like, I can see it now. Now I can actually look at it. And that's really what you're encouraging us to do, I think, isn't it, really, is to kind of step up and own this. But you're putting this lovely spin on it and telling us it's all good. I love that.
It's all good.
Good stuff. So just remind us of your website, Carla, and I'll obviously put all the link to get the book as well in the show notes.
Oh, thank you. It is carlamclaren.com, CarlaMclaren.
Excellent. Carla, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
So appreciate that. I feel so uplifted when I talk about this stuff, because usually if you're talking about emotions, you feel quite down because none of us want to have to face this nasty stuff. But I love the way she puts that spin on it and just makes all emotions valuable. It's a fantastic spin on it. Make sure you get a copy of that book. I'll put the link in the show notes, Embracing Anxiety. I also promised you Johnny from Unlimited. And don't forget, we've got some Unlimited beer, alcohol-free beer to give away if you go to thesoberclub.com. Click on the blog post there and you can win some of the beer. But enjoy this conversation.
My guest is Johnny Johnson, and we're going to hear his story and hear all about the amazing new product. But first of all, I want to hear your story, Johnny, because you wrote to me and said how much you enjoyed the podcast. And, I always love hearing from people who like the podcast, because it's really nice to know that it makes a difference. So, I'd love you to share a bit about your story.
Okay, definitely. So, well, thanks for having me on, first of all. I guess it all starts when I was sort of 16, 17 years old. I'm 32 now, but that's when I started sort of properly drinking, I guess, with like friends, you know, how we used to start on like park benches with your mate, that sort of stuff. Then going into, drinking in pubs and bars when I was legally allowed to drink. When I first started drinking, hangovers never really affected me. But as soon as I hit 30, hangovers just got, completely out of hand. And so last July, I got married to my wife, Antonia. And after our wedding party, I had like the mother of all hangovers. And I decided at that point, it lasted about 5 days until I felt normal again. And after that point, I decided to give booze a break for a bit. And I listened to your podcast and some other podcasts. And after quitting for 3 weeks and not having any alcohol, I felt a million times better. And everything changed.
It's funny, isn't it? Just picking up on that for a moment. You say like a hangover that lasts 5 days. I mean, oh my God! It's like, why do we even do that to ourselves? So like, if you ate something that didn't agree with you and you're ill, you would never eat that thing again, would you ever? Just incredible, isn't it? How on and on and on for years and years and years we do this unbelievably mad thing of poisoning ourselves. It's just bizarre. Anyway, I'm just picking up on that. But just before you hit your 3 week point, when you sort of made the decision to leave it off, how was that with friends and your social situation? Because I'm guessing if you'd had the mother of all hangovers, you would have had what at the time you'd have considered was a great party, and no doubt had other friends who were drinking. So how did that play out when you were off the booze with your friends?
Well, I guess, you know, for that sort of 15-year period from when I was sort of, you know, going to bars, you know, lifestyle was work Monday to Friday and normally go drinking on a Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night. And it was like every single week, probably maybe a few weekends missed off, but for like 10, 15 years, because that is just how sort of our culture, you know, growing up, I sort of grew up in that sort of booze Britain culture. And that's just, you know, so obviously, when I decided to quit, all of my friends and colleagues, they sort of knew me as like, you know, the fun time guy that would always be up for it. So I got a lot of pushback from people and people saying, oh, stop being a pathetic, you know, just have a beer and all that sort of stuff. And I think, you know, I'd never tried to sort of quit booze before. And just the more I was researching about alcohol-free and listening to podcasts, it just reinforced the fact that, you know, I'm doing the right thing. And then, you know, now everybody that knows me says how much I've improved in every aspect of my life. And you know, and just from seeing me, it's changed other people's perception of
that's brilliant. That's amazing, isn't it? So basically, you know, with this whole thing of the friends and the fear of, you know, the FOMO and all of that, I mean, what's your message to other guys and girls who are almost more worried about that than how they're going to feel? They're more worried about how others are going to react to them.
Well, the thing is now, I think the alcohol-free movement's getting so big.
Yeah, so it's made it a lot easier, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I don't think now, like last year, I got quite a bit of pushback. But since July of last year, there's so much press about alcohol-free. There's a lot more options. And there's such a big movement of, you know, living a healthier lifestyle and around sort of mental health.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone knows who's had a hangover, the regret and the sort of beer fear that you have and feeling, very anxious. And, you know, the best things about not drinking is not feeling anxious anymore.
I know. Tell me about it. It's amazing, isn't it? What other benefits did you find for yourself?
Well, the first thing that I noticed was I was sleeping really well. So I'd wake up like 5 in the morning. Well, I normally wake up at 5 for work and just be knackered. But I wake up at 5 and I'd be energized. So then I'd go for a run.
Yeah.
And that never happened. So sleep was a big improvement. I noticed initially that I ate loads more chocolate because obviously the sugar, I missed the sugar side of things. So I actually lost weight even though I ate more chocolate. Sleep was better. I was so much more focused as well.
Yeah.
So when I was speaking with people, my brain just worked quicker.
Right.
Have you ever seen the film Limitless?
No, I haven't actually.
Oh, so.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's brilliant. So it's Bradley Cooper, and he has this pill that basically opens up all the receptors in your brain.
Right.
And he turns into like a super switched on guy. Because they say we only use 10% of our brain. And
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's how I felt. I felt limitless.
Wow.
But obviously, you have seen the film to understand that.
I'm going to watch it now. So you said that, you know, listening to the podcasts really helped you. Is that because you were sort of just getting inspired by other people's stories that life could be better without any booze?
Massively, yeah. So every podcast that I listened to, yours, and then there was obviously One Year's No Beers that I mentioned to you before, everyone that was interviewed who'd given up the booze, everyone said how much their life improved.
Mm.
And it wasn't like, there wasn't anyone that was saying any negatives about giving up booze.
Yeah, no one ever regrets ditching the booze.
No. And I thought it was just a sort of a compounding message that everyone was saying. And then because I was sort of using it as daily reinforcement to stop drinking. So I listened to it on the training and train home from work. And it just sort of spurred me on and motivated me just to keep going.
Mm.
But then I would share it with all my friends and colleagues, and everyone was sort of getting bombarded by these podcasts that I was forwarding on to them. But Yeah, it just helped, and it sort of you start to realise that there's a massive community as well of support.
Yeah, totally, whole new world out there. Yeah. So let's talk about drinks then. So obviously you were researching alcohol-free drinks, and what did you find then?
So, most bars in London or restaurants, they only had one or two of sort of the big brands available, and I didn't enjoy those drinks. A friend of mine who'd given up the booze, who sort of convinced me to do it, he mentioned about going on to like the Dry Drinkers and Wise Bartenders and things like that. So I bought a case of all different flavours or all different brands of alcohol-free beers.
Yeah.
And just, I was amazed by how good that they tasted.
Mm.
But they weren't available in, a lot of places, a lot of bars.
Mm.
So that's what I found. And then from there, I sort of came up with my own idea.
Yeah, what made you decide to come up with Unlimited then? And tell us a little bit about, the brand. What's sort of unique about yours?
So at that point when I discovered alcohol-free beers, because my brain had woken up, if you like, I decided that I wanted to start my own business. I wanted to sort of take back control of my life because I was going to work at 5 o'clock, coming home at 8 o'clock at night.
Mm.
And I thought, I wasn't enjoying it. So decided to start a business. I had a newfound love for alcohol-free, decided to start my own alcohol-free beer brand, but with the mission to get good tasting alcohol-free beers into the sort of bars that I'd normally go to.
Mm.
Because if I didn't like some of the big brands, I know a lot of other people probably would have liked them.
Yeah, so exactly. Yeah.
That was the start of my idea. And then since then, I found a brewer and we've developed an alcohol-free lager. The whole brand, I wanted it to be like a healthy beer.
Mm. Yeah, I noticed from what the info you sent me that, what's obviously really important to you is that health aspect. Because as you've said, some of the alcohol-free beers are not, some of the alcohol-free drinks are not the healthiest when you actually look into it. So you've actually worked quite hard to make sure that yours, tell us about the sort of calories and the, because I think you've made it low carb and you've included vitamins. So just tell us a bit about that sort of ingredient profile for you.
So a lot of alcohol-free beers will naturally produce sort of minerals and vitamins because the alcohol normally kills them off when the alcohol's created.
Oh, is that right? Oh, is that what it is? Right.
Because you're using all sort of natural ingredients like barley, wheat and hops and, that's plant-based stuff.
Yeah, so exactly.
Normally it would have nutrients in it, but the alcohol normally kills it off. So because we don't create a lot of alcohol and then burn it off at the end, the way that we brew is that we never exceed 0.5%.
Oh, right. Okay. So it's not the same as de-alcoholizing then?
No.
Okay. Interesting.
So we brew in a similar way to Big Drop. I think they do a similar type of brewing process. But the beer is only 23 calories a bottle, which we're really pleased about. I think that's one of the lowest. It's got 33% of the recommended intake of vitamin B12, which is good for your respiratory system, that sort of stuff. Low carb. And so that's sort of, the whole brand. I wanted to create a beer, but I wanted to promote a healthy lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it looks really cool as well. I love the pack. I love the bottles are just really cool, aren't they? You've obviously got some good branding going on as well.
Yeah, I wanted it because a lot of beers in general are just very sort of colourful and quite arty. And some look like sort of like kids' drinks, some cans that you can get. And I just wanted something that was just a bit, back to basics, very simple, but quite sort of sleek.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, it's amazing. So you're hoping that this will, long term be in, as you say, some bars and pubs and clubs?
Yes. So obviously, with the coronavirus situation, obviously, a lot of places are closed down. So as soon as everything reopens, my mission is to get it into as many places as possible. Just so, when I'm out, I can have one of mine. Or
Absolutely, yeah. On the house, I would hope. That's amazing. Did you actually give up your job then to do this?
After our wedding, so I decided to start this business. And then a week after I decided to start the business, my wife fell pregnant, or told me she was pregnant.
Yeah.
Which was pretty scary. It's our first time. But in a way, so I've gone, our baby was born 2 weeks before the launch. So mid.
Oh, wow.
May. But I've, since then, I've gone on 6 months shared parental leave.
Okay.
So I've got like a 6 month period to get this off the ground.
Amazing.
But then, right. Yeah, hopefully won't go back to my normal job in November.
Right. Amazing. So I love stories like this because, you know, just from getting that inspiration and you know, ditching the booze yourself, look what you've created. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing that you've, I mean, literally turning your whole life around. Yeah. It's absolutely amazing. You must feel super proud of yourself.
Yeah, no, I am. And the main thing for me is I'm a lot happier.
Yeah.
Because I probably 95% of my weekends were spent hungover.
Yeah, yeah. So all that time you've got back.
I know. And all my relationships were sort of getting a bit fractured and, you know, I wouldn't make the effort to see people or exercise. Mm. So it's a complete, you know, turnaround in terms of, you know, my lifestyle now. But it's scary, but it's exciting.
Wow. And so now you've got a baby girl, is that right?
Yeah, little Rosie. Yeah.
Wow, how amazing. So you've literally been a birthing all round. How brilliant. So, and of course, you know that one of the most amazing things now is that you'll be, you know, a much more present dad than you would have been, of course.
Yes, yeah. I can, you know, I don't think that there's anything worse than a baby's cry, even now.
Mm. Yeah, no, absolutely. And if you were hungover and not present for her. Yeah. Amazing. That's just great. I mean, I'm so jealous that you did it so young. that's my only regret. I certainly don't regret giving up drinking, but I regret not giving up sooner, you know. Yeah. So anyways, where can we find out more about the beer then? I know we've got some to give away, which is really nice. And I know you're stocked with Wise Bartender, and I'm guessing people can come direct to your website. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. So we're stocked with Wise Bartender, but you can also get them from our website, which is www.unltd.beer.
So I love the name, by the way. Presumably that was summing up everything that you feel is possible when you're not drinking.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, unlimited.beer, and then we're on Instagram, unlimited.beer, and on Facebook too.
Yeah, brilliant. Johnny, thank you so much. It's a fabulous story. I really appreciate it, and I wish you every success with the brand. I think it's going to fly.
Brilliant. Thank you, Johnny. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
So we've got the alcohol-free beer to win. There's a bunch of other competitions on thesoberclub.com as well, and I'm going to do a few more competitions because, as I say, July is happy birthday to the Alcohol-Free Life podcast month, 18 months old next week, and I'm going to run a bunch of archive episodes for the next couple of weeks. Now, of course, if you have been listening right from the very start, you are going to get to hear some of the interviews again. So I hope that's a good thing. You know, if you're 18 months on as well, or you're a year on, then you probably won't mind hearing them again. I hope not. And for those of you who are new to it, it'll just be a lovely reminder of some of the old archive material, which I absolutely love listening to. So we've got 80 episodes, incredibly. And I would love to know your favourites. If you would drop me a line and tell me some of your favourites, I would just appreciate it so much. And we'll do a little, a little vote for the favourite podcasts. Because it's not always just the most, in inverted commas, famous person that really strikes a chord with you. Sometimes it's just a little thing that somebody says that really, really makes a difference. I know we did an interview with Mel Collins on the book Highly Sensitive People, and that got an incredible response. The amount of people who said, it wasn't until I stopped drinking that I realised actually I was quite introverted and a really highly sensitive person. So hearing Mel talk about that just literally changed everything for me. So I'd love to know your favourites. Please drop me a message on social media or whatever, email, you know where to find me. And as I've already said, I'm going to run a bunch of episodes that you can listen to again, and there'll be some competitions. So make sure you check Instagram. It's at Jane Lee Grace. And we'll make it a bit of a birthday month. I haven't shared with you that I am writing a book at last, hallelujah. And so I've got quite an intensive period coming up where I've got to meet my deadlines. I'm going to need lots of motivation for that. And I would love your stories. So I would love just, if you have a look at soberclub.com, there's a post there that's saying exactly what I need. But it's basically your tips if you have stopped drinking. And it doesn't matter what stage you are, because, of course, it's relevant how you're feeling week two and year six, you know, whatever. So I'd love your stories. And the other sort of section in the book, I'm going to have a little bit on anti-aging, because you've heard me say before that, well, I've got younger. That's my excuse. I believe that ditching the booze really does help with anti-aging. You know, forget your chemicals and your fancy creams and your Botox. Just stop drinking. And so if that's your experience and you have anything to share around the fact that you believe that some of the benefits for you of stopping drinking have been that you look better, you feel better, the whole anti-aging thing, then I'd be really interested in that too. But if you would love to be part of it, I just need 200 words or less, so it's not very much. Just a tip, just a little bit about your story, what happened for you in a fairly succinct way. Obviously, really important that you let me know whether you want me to use your name or initials or a different name. It doesn't matter, but obviously you need to make it clear to me. And the final decision will lie with the publishers as to what goes in the book, of course. But wouldn't it be great just to have some podcast listeners, you know, saying their bit, and just think of all the people you might inspire. So if you want to share that would be fantastic. So I've got quite a lot of work for you this week. you'd like those stories, please, under 200 words. Make sure you get those to me. You can email me, janie@janieleegrace.com. You can message me @janieleegrace on Facebook or on Instagram. And I need you to vote for me if you're listening to this before the 6th of July, which is britishpodcastawards.com/vote, and type alcohol-free life and then click on the email that they send you to verify. And what else? And vote for your favourite podcasts, please. Or not vote. Tell me your favourite podcasts, because it's a little bit of a looking back at the archives month from now on to celebrate our 18 months of sobriety. Of podcast, I'm not sobriety. It's two and a half years almost of sobriety. Goodness, I nearly forgot. Yeah, I am nearly 2.5 years, which is amazing. 18 months celebration of the podcast. So whatever you're doing in the next few weeks, enjoy and just be very careful with these pubs opening up. I'm sure you won't be encouraged to be over drinking. But it's going to be interesting, isn't it, to see what happens here in the UK with the opening up of pubs. And maybe we can all campaign for gyms and leisure centres and holistic centres to open up as well. We really do need these practitioners and these therapists back at work. I have a friend who's got awful joint pain, and it would just be so great if she can go and see a Bowen therapist. They do just incredible work for anyone with joint pain. But of course, it's not allowed just yet. But, you know, next time I do a podcast, because I'm going to run a few archive episodes, so next time I do my next proper episode, as it were, who knows, it might all have changed. Have a fantastic week, and I look forward to finding out what your fave episodes were. See you later. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.